Mother. Elizabeth Willard, the mother of George Willard, was tall and gaunt, and her face was marked with smallpox scars. Although she was but 45, some obscure disease had taken the fire out of her figure. Listlessly, she went about the disorderly old hotel, looking at the faded wallpaper and the ragged carpets, and when she was able to be about, doing the work of a chambermaid among beds soiled by the slumbers of fat travelling men. Her husband, Tom Willard, a slender, graceful man with square shoulders, a quick military step, and a black moustache trained to turn sharply up at the ends, tried to put the wife out of his mind. The presence of the tall, ghostly figure, moving slowly through the halls, he took as a reproach to himself. When he thought of her, he grew angry and swore. The hotel was unprofitable and forever on the edge of failure, and he wished himself out of it. He thought of the old house and the woman who lived there with him as things defeated and done for. The hotel, in which he had begun life so hopefully, was now a mere ghost of what a hotel should be. As he went spruce and businesslike through the streets of Winesburg, he sometimes stopped and turned quickly about, as though fearing that the spirit of the hotel and of the woman would follow him, even into the streets. "Damn such a life! Damn it!" he sputtered aimlessly. Tom Willard had a passion for village politics, and for years had been the leading Democrat in a strongly Republican community. "Some day," he told himself, "the fight of things political will turn in my favour, and the years of ineffectual service count big in the bestowal of rewards." He dreamed of going to Congress, and even of becoming governor. Once, when a younger member of the party arose at a political conference and began to boast of his faithful service, Tom Willard grew white with fury. "Shut up, you!" he roared, glaring about. "What do you know of service? What are you but a boy? Look at what I've done here. I was a Democrat here in Winesburg when it was a crime to be a Democrat. In the old days, they fairly hunted us with guns." Between Elizabeth and her one son, George, there was a deep, unexpressed bond of sympathy, based on a girlhood dream that had long ago died. In the son's presence, she was timid and reserved, but sometimes, while he hurried about town, intent upon his duties as a reporter, she went into his room, and, closing the door, knelt by a little desk, made of a kitchen table, that sat near a window. In the room by the desk, she went through a ceremony that was half a prayer, half a demand, addressed to the skies. In the boyish figure, she yearned to see something half forgotten that had once been a part of herself recreated. The prayer concerned that. "Even though I die, I will in some way keep defeat from you," she cried, and so deep was her determination that her whole body shook. Her eyes glowed, and she clenched her fists. "If I am dead and see him becoming a meaningless drab figure like myself, I will come back," she declared. "I ask God now to give me that privilege. I demand it. I will pay for it. God may beat me with his fists. I will take any blow that may befall, if but this my boy be allowed to express something for us both." Pausing uncertainly, the woman stared about the boy's room. "And do not let him become smart and successful either," she added vaguely. The communion between George Willard and his mother was outwardly a formal thing without meaning. When she was ill and sat by the window in her room, he sometimes went in the evening to make her a visit. They sat by a window that looked over the roof of a small frame building into Main Street. By turning their heads, they could see through another window, along an alleyway that ran behind the Main Street stores and into the back door of Abner Groff's bakery. Sometimes, as they sat thus, a picture of village life presented itself to them. At the back door of his shop appeared Abner Groff with a stick or an empty milk bottle in his hand. For a long time there was a feud between the baker and a grey cat that belonged to Sylvester West, the druggist. The boy and his mother saw the cat creep into the door of the bakery and presently emerge, followed by the baker, who swore and waved his arms about. The baker's eyes were small and red, and his black hair and beard were filled with flour dust. Sometimes he was so angry that, Although the cat had disappeared, he hurled sticks, bits of broken glass, and even some of the tools of his trade about. Once he broke a window at the back of Sinning's hardware store. In the alley, the grey cat crouched behind barrels filled with torn paper and broken bottles, above which flew a black swarm of flies. Once, when she was alone, and after watching a prolonged and ineffectual outburst on the part of the baker, Elizabeth Willard put her head down on her long white hands and wept. After that, she did not look along the alleyway any more, but tried to forget the contest between the bearded man and the cat. It seemed like a rehearsal of her own life, terrible in its vividness. In the evening, when the son sat in the room with his mother, the silence made them both feel awkward. Darkness came on, and the evening train came in at the station. In the street below, feet tramped up and down upon the board sidewalk. In the station yard, after the evening train had gone, there was a heavy silence. Perhaps Skinner Leeson, the express agent, moved a truck the length of the station platform. Over on Main Street sounded a man's voice laughing. The door of the express office banged. George Willard arose and, crossing the room, fumbled for the doorknob. Sometimes he knocked against a chair, making it scrape along the floor. By the window sat the sick woman, perfectly still, listless. Her long hands, white and bloodless, could be seen drooping over the ends of the arms of the chair. "I think you had better be out among the boys. You are too much indoors," she said, striving to relieve the embarrassment of the departure. "I thought I would take a walk," replied George Willard, who felt awkward and confused. One evening in July, when the transient guests who made the new Willard house their temporary home had become scarce, and the hallways, lighted only by kerosene lamps turned low, were plunged in gloom, Elizabeth Willard had an adventure. She had been ill in bed for several days, and her son had not come to visit her. She was alarmed. The feeble blaze of life that remained in her body was blown into a flame by her anxiety, and she crept out of bed, dressed, and hurried along the hallway toward her son's room, shaking with exaggerated fears. As she went along, she steadied herself with her hand, slipped along the papered walls of the hall, and breathed with difficulty. The air whistled through her teeth. As she hurried forward, she thought how foolish she was. "He is concerned with boyish affairs," she told herself. "Perhaps he has now begun to walk about in the evening with girls." Elizabeth Willard had a dread of being seen by guests in the hotel that had once belonged to her father, and the ownership of which still stood recorded in her name in the country courthouse. The hotel was continually losing patronage because of its shabbiness, and she thought of herself as also shabby. Her own room was in an obscure corner, and when she felt able to work, she voluntarily worked among the beds, preferring the labour that could be done when the guests were abroad seeking trade among the merchants of Winesburg. By the door of her son's room, the mother knelt upon the floor and listened for some sound from within. When she heard the boy moving about and talking in low tones, a smile came to her lips. George Willard had a habit of talking aloud to himself, and to hear him doing so had always given his mother a peculiar pleasure. The habit in him, she felt, strengthened the secret bond that existed between them. 1,000 times she had whispered to herself of the matter. "He is groping about, trying to find himself," she thought. "He is not a dull clod, all words and smartness. Within him there is a secret something that is striving to grow. It is the thing I let be killed in myself." In the darkness in the hallway by the door, the sick woman arose and started again toward her own room. She was afraid that the door would open and the boy come upon her. When she had reached a safe distance and was about to turn a corner into a second hallway, she stopped and, bracing herself with her hands, waited, thinking to shake off a trembling fit of weakness that had come upon her.